I've been walking a tightrope between fact and fiction. Been wrestling with demons in small bottled prisons. Been talking to sinners who claim to be Christian, but shouting at leaders who claim to be listening. And the pendulum swings, but I can't stop the pull. Our elections are travesties, paid for in full by a gang full of sellouts who worship a bull. Why can't it all just be free and equal?
Hey, this is Christina Tobin. Thanks for joining us on the Free and Equal Network today. We've got Lee Camp. He's a comedian, funny guy, activist, author, and welcome to the show, Lee. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me, Christina.
You're really out there. You're just all over YouTube, all over Facebook, social media. I mean, you're doing some pretty awesome things. You really set yourself apart from a lot of comedians because you get out there in the forefront of the movement and care so much about what's going on in the world. And for our listeners that don't know you yet, I'm sure many do, can you just tell them a little bit about yourself and your background, where you're from and what you do and what your passions are?
Sure. Yeah, I am kind of all over the map. I have been a stand-up comedian for 15 years, but that involves a lot of things. It's not just the live stand-up performances, which are perhaps my favorite part of it. But I do a lot of videos called Moment of Clarity. There's 280 of them online. There's two a week I try and put out, and they're similar to my stand-up in that they kind of try and cover important issues, but make them funny at the same time, and in that way, make it something that people are willing to listen to rather than fall asleep and pass out into their soup while they're trying to learn about the world. So, it's basically this combination of activism and comedy, and I have books out there and live comedy albums and these rants and try and do a little bit of everything, but we're in dire times. We're in the middle of something very serious, I think, going on in this world. Some people don't really realize how tragic the circumstances are. And that's why people have to wake up. I think we're in the middle of something that's dark versus light. It's evil versus good. It's Mel Gibson now versus 1993 Mel Gibson. So it's pretty serious.
Yeah, you've definitely toured around the country a lot, and a lot of campuses. I know probably like 70, 100, something like that, I recall reading. And it seems
500.
Okay, it's outdated from what I... And 500 is. So coming directly from the source, so we definitely got to get your Wikipedia page updated. But
yeah, I got to get it updated.
Yeah, 500. So it's like, what is your feeling connecting with so many kids out there in comedy? Do you feel like comedy really brings us all together? And I don't know, just how have you felt lately in connecting with the kids and the people, with how they feel with what's going on in the world and how you've been able to connect with them?
I mean, it's been pretty incredible, and I just got an email today from a high school student who, was asking me how to change the world, and those kind of emails are really, they give you a lot of hope. So, you do realize that there are young people that get it and waking up far earlier, far younger than I did. So that's really exciting. You know, the thing that's kind of not as hopeful is that most of those colleges, those 500 colleges or so I've done, were before I was doing much of a political comedy act. And so now that I'm political and really take on the issues head on, the colleges don't book me as much anymore, which I'm fine with, in the sense that, if they don't want my brand of stuff, then I'm not going to force it on them. But it's kind of sad that our activities boards at our colleges now think that if you have an opinion, you can't be seen by their students. And I think that definitely needs to change. And I think that students should have a chance to think about these deeper issues, to really take them in and decide what they feel is important about the world, rather than hiding the truth from them and thinking that's the answer.
Looks like you're a Maryland boy. You grew up in Maryland?
Yeah, I grew up till I was 8 in Maryland, outside D.C., and then after 8 was Richmond, Virginia. So got a lot of Southern in me.
I can hear it. I grew up in Texas myself, born and raised 16 years. So yeah, definitely a connection there. And yeah, I mean, as far as the kids, I couldn't agree with you more. It just seems like, I don't know, it seems like the times are changing. And while mainstream media and, you know, all the everything out there that wants to, you know, I don't know, lead us people into thinking giving up, you know, I always say giving up is not an option. If you give up, you become a part of the problem. And that is not okay with me. And so, like, it's amazing, you know, that it seems like the kids, you know, I've been seeing in the polls are going to really rise and wake up and really be at the forefront of an awakening, a mass awakening, you know, fun and so on. And so it's pretty interesting. The universities, I definitely could see how that could be an issue, but you know, they're a business too. And I think they're struggling when I last checked, right? The education system.
Well, yeah, they're, you know, it's becoming completely corporatized and that's not really a good thing. And, but yeah, apathy, you're absolutely right. Apathy is not an option. I mean, you know, if we're going to lose the battle, I'd rather go down swinging than say I turn the other direction. You know, I mean, and people will tell you you're too political. I think a lot of people are afraid of being, you know, losing certain friends or being told they're too political. But, you know, I think anytime someone says that, anytime someone says, you know, don't talk about those issues or you're being too political or just, you know, let's just talk about other less controversial issues, you know, while we're at dinner or whatever it is, they're taking a political stance. That's an equally political stance. It's a defense of the status quo. So whenever they tell you you're too political and stop talking about it, you should respond to them that they're taking an equally political stance by full-on defending the status quo and saying we shouldn't be looking at these things.
You know, let's dig a little deeper. I know you were pretty involved. You had performed at the 2008 Democratic National Convention, and good old Obama, Clinton, Gore, those individuals were there. And I know, like, when you first came, the first time I saw Lee Camp, I mean, moment of clarity, I've definitely, I watched you and Russell Brand probably equally. I think you're both hilarious in different ways. And I just see someday you guys meeting. I really do. If you haven't already, you probably have. But, you know, digging deeper.
We haven't met, actually.
Oh, well, I think that'll change. I hope, fingers crossed, it has to be. But, you know, really what really came to surface was when I saw you on that Fox News. And many of our listeners, Fox and Friends in 2008, it was before the presidential campaign. And I don't know, can you tell a little bit of people about what that interview entailed? And really, at what point, what turning point did you decide, okay, I'm going to really, not that you weren't speaking the truth before, but I'm going to really express how I feel.
Right.
You know? Right. What was it that just was that, you know, that point in your life?
Well, they had asked me to be on, and they knew I was left wing, but they thought I would still play along because, you know, most comedians and I think most public personas in of any form are going to play along for the most part and not upset the you know, the cart. They're not going to shake the boat. So they didn't expect me to say, you know, what I said, which was their parade of propaganda and a festival of ignorance, and I told everybody to turn off their televisions. And I had, when they had asked me to be on, I knew I was going to do something like that because I had no interest in just being a clown on their TV network. And so what I did to kind of keep my nerve, because it's tough to upset the people there because they don't, you know, they don't come off as evil when you're chatting with them one-on-one. They're just producers and things, and they just want the show to go smoothly. And so in order to keep my nerve, I reread an article from the Lancet Medical Journal about how, you know, we kept hearing that whatever, 60,000 people had died in Iraq. And this is back in 2008. And in fact, the numbers were closer to 800,000 or maybe even a million at that point. So I kind of reread that article to remind myself of all the people who had died and how that's why this mattered. And I said what I said, and I didn't expect it to go viral, but someone put it up online, and it got millions and millions of views. So, you know, I think people were waiting for that catharsis, that moment of, yes, it is a parade of propaganda, and thank God someone said it on their own network. You know?
Yeah, thanks for doing that. You really just kind of speaking the truth of mainstream media. It seems it's just a tool, one of many tools, like the Commission on Presidential Debates and the two-party system, yeah. The Federal Reserve, you know, that a few powerful, maybe a dozen, whatever, so rich families, Rockefeller, Rothschilds, they used to intentionally divide us and create all this needless chaos. That's kind of what I'm sensing. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the two-party system is designed to make people think that either you're with this team or you're with that team, rather than thinking deeper than that. You know, what are these teams really fighting for? And just because I agree with them on one issue, why do I have to agree with them on this separate one that I feel differently about? And you know, you see how scared they are of outside parties and outside paradigms getting into the debate in the way they arrested Jill Stein in the New York debates and locked her in a basement chained to a chair for 4 hours during the debate, because that's how frightened they are of outside viewpoints.
Yeah, I remember in 2010, Laura Wells ran for governor, Green Party, same thing at Dominican University. They didn't let her in, and she ended up getting a ticket from a supporter. It's very exclusive. And so when she went into the front door as just the person to view the debate, and might I add, Laura Wells is super peaceful, like Jill Stein. They remind me a lot of each other. I mean, there's a lot of similarities, yet different ladies in many ways, but just really great people. And I saw them arrest her. And I mean, literally, I was able to get handed off from her to myself her ticket, and I sat in her spot at the debate at Dominican University. Yeah. I mean, I almost, like, it almost brings tears in my eyes to see this wonderful woman have handcuffs on her, and knowing, like, my taxpayer dollars are paying for that. And they almost did the same to Ralph Nader, you know, a couple election cycles ago, where they threatened to arrest him and he barely dodged that one. I mean, he was, you know, it's so unethical. I couldn't agree with you more. Another tool that, you know, wealthy families, elite use to control our system, divide us. And really, does a debate need to be a debate? It seems like it should be more of an intellectual conversation, dialogue. There's so much in common, left or right alike. So,
they don't want the dialogue. They don't want a deeper dialogue among the American people. They just want you cheering for a team and ignoring past the election. You know, you get your team elected and then you go home and don't think about it anymore, and they get to run wild in the government.
Well, I always like to say, no matter what you think, the Republicans and Democrats, they really do like each other, you know?
Yeah, they agree on 90% of the issues. They should like each other.
But, you know, majority polls over 60% are rising, seeing themselves as independents. And even people affiliated or not so much with political parties, I think, are recognizing that they don't work. And so instead of pointing fingers here at Free and Equal and our supporters, hope that yourself, we see the problems and we're really about fixing it. So, but I wanted to ask a couple more questions while I have you. It's awesome. Gosh, you're really stepping up there even more and getting so involved and making the world a better place. I saw a recent interview with Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Chris Hedges. He was the moderator of our first presidential debate, Free and Equal, 2008.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, with Ralph Nader and Chuck Baldwin, Constitution Party. It was the first alternative debate to ever be nationally televised. So that was pretty cool. And he was our moderator. So I met Chris then.
Cool.
Yeah, I recently saw him at Truth Dig. Just caught up with him a little bit, hoping he'll be a part of our event in May at UCLA. But how did that go, sitting down with Chris and one-on-one? And it's like you were interviewing him. Your role is beyond an author and comedian. It was pretty cool to see you do that.
Yeah, well, he's a legend, and you know, I highly recommend people check out his books and the fight he's been taking on. You know, even to the level of taking Obama to court over NDAA, and he's an incredible thinker, and it was an honor to sit down with him. At the same time, I was trying a little bit to be also be a comedian
comedian?
And so it was interesting trying to make him laugh. I he's one of those guys you've never seen smile. I did succeed in making him smile once, I think, but that's a high point of my career right there. So
yeah, everybody, don't be fooled in this interview. Lee Camp is hilarious. If you go to Lee Camp, LeeCamp.com, that's
.net.
I'm so sorry. .net.
That's okay.
So, I'm even looking at it, just not closely. But so But, you know, check it out, guys, leecamp.net. And but wanted to roll back over. You've been hitting topics of the NSA. I know Google and a lot of different companies have come out really strongly, I mean, against seems the NSA. And can you tell us a little bit more of that? I've seen you've recently done some work on that as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of points to be made. One is that, you know, this has nothing to do with Edward Snowden, because you could just for the sake of argument, you could pretend that Snowden is the worst human being to ever live. You know, you could pretend he makes Charles Manson look like Tom Hanks, and it would have nothing to do with the NSA surveillance scandal. He's just a messenger, and people really need to focus on what the larger picture is, which is the fact that we're looking at the largest surveillance infrastructure ever created in mankind's history, and we shouldn't be okay with that. And even if there's that rare person who loves Obama and thinks Obama has done everything right, you still don't want this surveillance infrastructure sitting there for the next, you know, tyrant that gets into office. Even if you were to love Obama, the next guy's going to get into office, and he's going to have access to all of our information and everything we do.
Exactly. It's frightening. And so, Lee, I'm finally, I would say most of my guests I've had have met. I haven't met you yet. Bought some tickets. I'm going to see you. You're going to be in LA this Friday. By the time we air this, it'll be probably after. We aren't live yet, but we're going to be on the Free and Equal Network. But this Friday, what's today? The 10th? So it's the 13th, 14th. Rooftop Revolutionaries. That's cool. You're like bringing humor and bringing music together. Can you tell me a little bit more about what inspired the two of you to come together? And this is pretty cool. I'm excited to meet you on Friday. Finally.
Yeah, I know, to finally meet you. We've talked a lot, but yeah, it's very exciting. Friday's already sold out, and then we're gonna have another one Saturday. I mean, I just think that art in general, whether it be comedy or rock and roll or anything, you know, painting, whatever it is, should have a stronger voice and that kind of thing. It doesn't always have to have that, but there should be a lot of that out there, and it should be rewarded and watched and viewed and shared. And so when I found out about their music, I was excited, and I wanted to do a joint show. So yeah, me and Rooftop Revolutionaries are going to do a couple of shows, and it should be amazing. I think it'll be a great night of both comedy and rock and roll.
Yeah, you know what sealed the deal for me was the $2 beers.
Yeah, we're gonna have $2 beers there. So I think that's why most people are coming.
Yeah, not at all. Eleanor Sweet, Rooftop Revolutionary, she's going to be performing at our United We Stand Fest Free and Equal this May 10th at UCLA Poly Pavilion 10K. Lee, you're going to be out there. It looks like, I know things are rolling. I you know, for May, I look forward to having you there, it seems. I know you might have some scheduling, but we are definitely hoping to see you there, because more laughter and more humor is definitely an energy of bringing everyone together, you know, on top of just music, and the energy and spirituality and innovation. There's just Tesla. It's just really going to be cool. And I'm so excited.
Yeah, I can't wait. And I love performing in front of audiences of people that all give a crap. They're all there because they care. And it's fun.
Yeah. Did you have any other projects you wanted to mention or websites for our listeners? Of course, leecamp.net.
I do the Moment of Clarity twice a week. And then I also do a Moment of Clarity podcast where we interview people like Chris Hedges and Greg Palast and Peter Joseph and a lot of great people. So it's also called Moment of Clarity. It's on iTunes. My book is called Moment of Clarity. So yeah, if people just go to leecamp.net, they can find all that stuff.
Sweet. Well, man, Lee, I appreciate your time today. I know you're traveling around and in LA networking up and down. Again, I'll see you on Friday. And I really am so thankful for you to be a part of this movement. And I'll tell you, with your experience and speaking in front of the universities, you're more than welcome to be a part of our 10-stop university bus tour. I mean, you know what you're doing.
Great.
And you can speak your mind. And this is the future. And you've really stuck. You know, you don't compromise. You stick with what it is that you do. And so love to have you join Public Enemy and founders of Wu-Tang Clan. We now have Playing for Change, to spiritual author Marianne Williamson, to the founder of March Against Monsanto, Tammy Kanal. I mean, law enforcement against prohibition, the list goes on and on, fairvote.org. And so I really look forward to having you out there, and we're going to address the need to inspire people to run for local office, beginning with those congressional races in 14, and take back our government. And it's really not as hard as we think it may be. The impossible is inevitable, I like to say. So
sounds great. I can't wait.
Lee, you rock. Thanks so much for your time. And you're listening to the Free and Equal Network. This is Christina Telvin. I'm so thanks for having you on. We're gonna have Lee on many more times. So thanks again for your time today. Paid for in full.